He's pretty much saying what God says in his gospel. What he's saying there is baptism is connected with the gospel. As Christians, we know the only thing that saves us is God's love for us in Christ Jesus. So apparently, baptism connects us to God's love for us in Christ Jesus.
All right, that's one of the sound bites of the week. In 25 minutes, we're going to be playing soundbite of the week. That's Bob Rosso. We had a conversation with him, and he was commenting on what Peter means when he says baptism now saves us. Just one of those. We got a couple more when we round the bend of the bottom of the hour to play soundbite of the week with you. Until then, we're going to be discussing Lutheranism in a postmodern culture. Dr. Peter Berger is our guest. He's professor emeritus of religion, sociology, and theology, and director of the Institute for the Study of Economic Culture at Boston University. He's going to be presenting a lecture tonight at 7 at Concordia Seminary's Werner Auditorium, titled Lutheran Identity in America. Our call-in numbers are 505-7850 or 1-800-730-2727. And our in-studio email address is issuesetc@kfuo.org. Feel free to join us with a question or a comment as we talk about Lutheranism in a postmodern culture. Dr. Berger, welcome to Issues, Etc.
Thank you.
Let's start out, if we could, by just setting the landscape in our culture. The greatest challenges that are facing the church today in modern culture, some would say postmodern culture.
Well, I it's not very polite to quarrel with the title of a program, but I don't think we are in a postmodern culture, at least not in America, and certainly not in a post-Christian culture. Postmodern is a very unhappy term, and let's not go into it. It gets very complicated, but associated with this is usually an idea that it's a post-Christian culture, it's a secular culture. And that's a very inaccurate description of the United States. It may be true of Europe, much of Europe, but it's not true in America. This is a very religious country.
So how would you describe American culture, if not postmodern? How would you describe it?
Well, one way of describing it is to say this is a very religious country, but it has a very secularized cultural elite. And many of the political issues of the last decades have to do with a conflict between those two. 1963 was really a very crucial year when the Supreme Court decided that prayer in public schools was unconstitutional, which enraged many people. 10 years later, you had Roe versus Wade, which intensified the resentment of a secular cultural elite. So one picture I've used, if you ask how does one look at the United States, if you look at sociology of religion worldwide, which is my business, one of the most religious countries in the world is India. One of the most secular is Sweden. You could describe the United States as a country of Indians with a Swedish cultural elite. And the Indians have become progressively annoyed and organized to express that annoyance.
So are we? Do you think that we are at just kind of the natural, in the natural course of American culture, struggling with something we were always going to struggle with eventually? The conflict between the cultural elite, the Swedes, and the mass, the Indians? Do you think we were going to eventually, sooner or later, going to meet this loggerheads?
It's very hard to predict, very hard. I mean, I don't see any dramatic changes in the near future. When you go into the farther future, who knows? But I would say this tension, conflict is a slightly, well, conflict, tension, whatever word you want to use, I think it's going to be with us for quite a while. And you're going to have back and forth in terms of who wins, who loses, certain battles.
You mentioned Europe might be genuinely described as a postmodern culture or even a post-Christian culture. Is there anything that Christians and the church in America today can learn by looking at where Europe is in terms of its culture?
Well, one thing you can learn is that secularism doesn't really lead anywhere very productive. Europe is a morally and spiritually pretty demoralized continent. That's a very negative lesson. But also it's unclear what's going to happen in Europe. I mean, yes, it's much more secularized than the United States. It's now facing a very serious challenge to the secular culture from Islam, and how Europe is going to deal with the challenge of Islam is going to be very important for the future.
What are the challenges here in our culture, however it's characterized? What are the challenges facing the church?
Well, I would say when you look at the religious scene in America, you have three big groups. You have, on the one hand, you have the evangelical community, something which is totally lacking in Europe. Depending on how you define this, you're talking about 60 million people or so. That's a huge chunk of the culture, which is certainly not secularized or post-Christian or anything. Then you have the sort of liberal, mainline Protestant community, which is very much infiltrated, I would say, by secularity. And then you have a big group in the middle, which Nancy Ammerman, a colleague of mine, who's a very good sociologist of religion, has described as golden rule Christianity. Christianity is understood as sort of a moral code. Well, I would say from a Lutheran point of view, each of those three are very doubtful. I think from a Lutheran point of view, one could even say that what we have here is three different variants of works righteousness, except the definition of the works is different in each mm-hmm. case.
So when Americans self-identify as Christian, it could mean any of those things or something else. When someone is asked on a survey,
absolutely,
are you a Christian? Say, well, of course I am a Christian.
You have to know the context from which this person comes.
You said three different variants on works righteousness. If you would, just in a little bit of detail, how does that apply to the evangelical community, the mainline Protestant denominations, the golden rule Christianity?
If I were to put it impolitely, which I don't usually like to do, and I'm a friendly sort of guy, but I would say the evangelical community has made a fetish out of the Bible. And the Bible is not a magical object. The Christian left, to use that term, has made a fetish out of a political agenda. And this big amorphous thing in the middle, this golden rule Christianity, has made a fetish out of morality. In the most law, in the most blatant sense, I mean, Christianity becomes a code of behavior, very legalistic in a way, although it's loose and tolerant, but it's legalistic. And I think each one of those three segments of American Christianity do not understand the, for Lutherans, very decisive distinction between law and gospel.
Speaking of law and gospel, what is it then that makes Lutheranism unique to challenge the obstacles faced in the culture, the challenges in the culture, beginning with the Lutheran distinctive of law and gospel?
Well, I would say that is the most important in terms of facing this particular culture. Now, I don't want to be impolite, but let me say this is what I think the Lutheran witness should be. I'm not saying that, in fact, it is. And if you allow me to say this in this building, I mean, if you look at the two main branches of Lutheranism, the liberal ELCA type of Lutheranism is so similar to mainline Protestantism that it shares, I think, it participates very much in that particular form of works righteousness, which is political, to some extent, psychotherapeutic. And Missouri, I think, has fixated itself in a rigid orthodoxy, which it seems to me is also a misunderstanding of law and gospel. It's also a kind of law. So I'm not very happy with American Lutheranism as it is today, at least in its public manifestations, although I'm sure there are many congregations and individuals and pastors who are authentically Lutheran in these terms.
What about the distinction, Luther's distinction, between the two governments or the two kingdoms? He would describe it in terms of God's left-hand kingdom or his right-hand kingdom, the kingdom of law, reason, force, and the kingdom of grace, the forgiveness of sins, the means of grace.
Well,
how is that equipping Lutherans uniquely to face the challenges in America?
Well, I think the two kingdoms distinction comes directly out of the distinction of law and gospel. Law and gospel, as I understand it, is the underlying distinction, and this is, as it were, the social and political consequence of it. I think, in terms of the politicization of Christianity, I would say the distinction, the Lutheran distinction, is very anti-utopian. It does not expect a utopia on earth, and certainly does not expect the church to have the function of bringing that utopia about. In terms of the other two groups, I mean, the moralistic center, although many of its features are attractive, there's not an unattractive world, this golden rule Christianity. Mm-hmm. These people are tolerant, they mean well, I'm not knocking that. But I think it's a misunderstanding of the gospel. The gospel is not a new moral code. And the evangelicals, well, there are different versions of evangelicals, but I mean, the Bible becomes a kind of, what shall I say, magical object, which is not at all Lutheran. Think how easygoing Luther was, for example, in deciding whether to kick out the book of James, the epistle of James. And another branch of this evangelical world makes an idol out of an experience. I mean, Pentecostalism being the extreme case of and all of this is what in the 16th century Luther called Schwärmerei, enthusiasm, salvation by subjective ecstasy. So it seems to me Lutheranism in principle would be in a extremely strategic position to challenge some of the assumptions of this religious culture, which is not postmodern, but not post-Christian, but is a misunderstanding, it seems to me, of some important elements of what Christianity is all about.
It strikes me that I'm remembering a quote from Hal Sankbeil in a book he wrote called Dying to Live. I don't know if he's quoting someone else, maybe he is, but he says the problem is not the godlessness of our age, but in fact the gods of our age. They're all the wrong gods. You nod your head, you agree?
No, I would agree. And I would say that, particularly in America, in most of the world other than Europe, the main challenge is not secularism, which is a relatively small group of people, although they're very influential. It's pluralism. It's not that there's not enough religion, there's too much. And how does the individual choose in this very bewildering marketplace of religious traditions, movements, moral systems, lifestyles, so forth? That's a very different challenge from saying, you know, we live in a godless world or a secular world.
We're talking with Dr. Peter Berger about Lutheranism in today's culture. He is Professor Emeritus of Religion, Sociology, and Theology and Director of the Institute for the Study of Economic Culture at Boston University. He's going to present a lecture tonight at 7 at Concordia Seminary's Werner Auditorium titled Lutheran Identity in America. Feel free to join us with a question or a comment. 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727. Our in-studio email address is issuesetc@kfuo.org. In about 15 minutes, we're going to play Soundbite of the Week. What we do is we take 5 soundbites from this week's program, from all this week's program. We lay them before you, and we just ask you, agree, disagree, makes no difference, which for you is your radio soundbite of the week that's coming up here in about 15 minutes. So the evangelical community, as you described it, these three sectors of American culture, the evangelical community, the liberal mainline, the golden rule Christianity, all of them are deficient in terms of the proper distinction between law and gospel, to use that technical term.
Yes, I think so.
And then growing out of that, the ability to distinguish between the two kingdoms. I mean, is it a simple inability to distinguish between the two kingdoms that God, through which God rules the world, or is it just a confusion of the two?
Well, I think it's both. And I'm not a historian, but I think much of the problem comes from the fact that most of American Protestantism derives from the Calvinist Reformation. And that's something that Calvinism, I think, never understood. I mean, Calvinism, wherever it became established, created a new law, whether it was in New England, whether it was in Geneva, in Scotland. And that continues even in its liberalized form. I mean, say, Methodists or Presbyterians today, or certainly not Calvinists in the old sense, most of them. But that continues, and that's utopian. The idea you can create the kingdom of God in this world through your own actions.
So when you see, for instance, the evangelical community pushing hard to have, say, 10 commandments posted in public places, they think, in their terminology, they're trying to keep God in the public square. Or the religious mainline, the left mainline, saying, well, we need to advocate more for this social policy or whatever. it's all the same impulse behind it. Those two groups would never say we're being driven by the same impulse. They would consider their impulses quite different, wouldn't they?
Yeah, well, on this issue, I mean, I tend to sympathize with the evangelicals. I think it's crazy to think about a violation of the Constitution of the Ten Commandments in a court building. But no, I agree with you. I mean, there are great similarities, and you have a secular fundamentalism today as you have a Christian one. I mean, we just had a wonderful, wonderful, it's a terrible story, but a very clear illustration of this in Boston just last week, where the Catholic Charities, which is the biggest adoption agency in the state, and a very good one, withdrew from all adoption activities because the liberal lobby, where the gay movement is very influential, wanted to insist that Catholic agencies have to have same-sex couples adopt children. And the Catholic Charity, which is a law in Massachusetts, and Catholic Charity says we can't do that, and the only way out was to give up all adoption policy. Now, on the part of the, in this case, the fundamentalists were the secular ones, not the Catholic ones. And the very valuable service to children has been, at least for the moment, dropped because of a kind of fundamentalist, highly legalistic notion of equality.
So does it surprise you to find this utopian hope in both the right and the left?
No, it doesn't surprise me. I think I understand it, and it comes out of very similar motives. It's nice to think that you know what a just society is and you're going to bring it about. If you can make yourself believe that, it's very nice.
One other distinction we need to discuss is, and it's related to the other two we've been talking about, both the distinction between Long Gospel and the Two Kingdoms, and that is the famous phrase of being both simultaneously saint and sinner. The tension of the Christian life strikes me, Dr. Berger, that the attempt to build a utopia is an attempt on a grand scale to relieve that tension,
yes,
in favor,
absolutely,
of the saint.
Yeah. Yeah, in each case you have the utopia of someone who's only saint. Now, the content of what the sainthood is supposed to be obviously differs between these groups. But the tension evaporates. I quite agree with the way you put it.
Are we, as Lutherans, with that distinction firmly in hand and the desire not to resolve the tension, but simply say the tension is there, this is the state of the Christian life, are we uniquely suited to offer a different message to the culture with that?
We would be, I think, if we stayed with the core of what the Lutheran Reformation was about. And I would use another, I mean, sure, Simul Justus et Peccato is very relevant here. I would take the sola fide as even more basic. We are saved by faith only. And that means, it seems to me, a capacity to live with uncertainty. And much of the, when the tension is relieved, as you very nicely put it, I think people live then in the illusion of certainty. They know what is right, they know who they are, they know how to be saved, if you will. I don't think that is at all something that Lutherans should have. And it seems to me that sola fide, in its most ample meaning, is the capacity to live with uncertainty. If we were certain, we wouldn't need faith.
So uncertainty about self, about society, about our ability to make the situation any better,
yeah,
whether or not our solutions to any particular problem are necessarily the right thing to do. I mean, Luther talks about and Uwe's very fond of talking about Christians living in their vocation, the necessity to get your hands dirty. And a Christian living in his vocation, unafraid to get his hands dirty with the sin of the world and even of himself, that's a tension you're going to be living with, not one that you can make go away very easily.
No, I quite agree. You and I obviously don't have big argument here.
Okay, then as an expert on sociology, religion, how do you assess the mega church movement in the U.S.? It's not a uniquely U.S. phenomenon, but it's certainly one that many have been taking note of.
I must tell you, I haven't had much contact with it. I've only visited one, probably one of the biggest one in Dallas, which is kind of frightening. I don't know what to think about it. I mean, my instincts are negative, but I haven't really studied it. I'd rather not comment on it.
All right. All right. Do you think, then let's talk about the largest segment of Christianity, at least in terms of denominational lines in America, and that would be the Roman Church still. And we're talking worldwide, half of all Christians are Catholics. Do you think that the culture here in America has also seeped into the Roman Church, and in what way?
Oh, and how? I would say if you look at data, what Roman Catholics in America believe and live, most of them fall under the category of Golden Rule Christianity. Many fall in the left, liberal, politicized camp. And I think if Rome went there and reining some of this in, American Catholicism would look much more like mainline Protestantism than it does today. And except for those issues where Rome is absolutely adamant, abortion being obviously one, same-sex marriage, a couple others, if you look at what even what the bishops say, it tends to be very similar to what the liberal Protestants say on social issues, political issues.
Many have noted the difference between American Catholicism and worldwide Catholicism. Do you think it's headed on a different vector because
yes.
It's in America?
Oh, in America. Well, look, Philip Jenkins wrote a very nice book, historian, 2 years ago, called The New Christendom, where he points out that increasingly Christians live not in Europe and North America, but in Asia, Africa, and Latin America. And they are very, very different. And what upsets liberal progressive Catholics in Boston or in Paris, they love in Peru or in the Congo. So I think the direction, for purely demographic reasons, the direction of the Catholic Church is going to become increasingly conservative theologically, in a very traditional Roman Catholic way.
We've been talking about Lutheranism in today's American culture. Dr. Peter Berger is Professor Emeritus of Religion, Sociology, and Theology, and also Director of the Institute for the Study of Economic Culture at Boston University. He will present a lecture tonight at 7 at Concordia Seminary's Werner Auditorium titled Lutheran Identity in America. Thank you very much for being our guest. Thanks for taking the time to come in to Studio A.
Thank you for asking me.
And Uwe, thank you for bringing him by as well.
Thanks.
All right, when we come back from this break, well, it's going to be very interesting. We've got 5 sound bites, and it's time to play Soundbite of the Week. That means you have to get ready to call. What we do during Soundbite of the Week, if you're not familiar, just a simple, lighthearted, no-brainer kind of 25 minutes on issues, etc. All you got to do is listen to the sound bites that we've picked out. They mean something to us. I mean, they struck us as interesting, appalling. You can call them whatever you want. You don't have to agree with the sound bite for it to be your sound bite of the week. In fact, you could completely disagree. You might just find it funny. You might find it confusing. Sound bite of the week is about hearing something and then saying, wow, I need to hear that again. Or, wow, did you hear what that guy said? The best caller is going to get an Issues Etc. travel mug when we play Soundbite of the Week right after this. 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727.
The radio voice of the Lutheran faith for the 21st century. You're listening to Issues Etc. You'll find lots of wonderful illustrations in our Issues Etc. Book of the Month for March. It's titled, He is Risen Indeed. This picture book for children ages 4 and up depicts the drama of Passion Week in words from Scripture. He is Risen Indeed is published by Concordia Publishing House, 1-800-325-3040. Or you can find out more about this book on our website, issuesetc.org. He is Risen Indeed costs $12.99 plus shipping and handling. David Erickson's paintings capture the events of Good Friday and Easter morning in He is Risen Indeed. 1-800-325-3040 or issuesetc.org. He is Risen Indeed will help children learn about Jesus' suffering, death, and resurrection. Looking for an Easter gift for a young child, grandchild, or godchild? He is Risen Indeed, our Issues Etc. Book of the Month for March. 1-800-325-3040 or issuesetc.org.
Mutations, they're really evolution's enemy. Answers with Ken Ham, a founder of the Answers in Genesis Ministry.
Ken, I remember being taught that mutations are supposedly an important part of the mechanism of evolution. So how can they be, as you called it, an enemy?
Well, Mark, mutations are changes that occur in our genes, you know, our DNA. It's the result of such things as harmful radiation. Now, evolutionists admit that such changes cause mistakes in our genes, but they claim that sometimes mutations can produce new information. For instance, to change a reptile into a bird, scales to feathers, for example, requires a lot of added new information not previously available in the genes of the reptile. But Dr. Lee Spetner, formerly of Johns Hopkins University, has spent years searching for that one piece of evidence to show that a mutation can actually increase information. And he said, quote, "But in all the reading I've done in the life sciences literature, I've never found a mutation that added information. All point mutations that have been studied on the molecular level turn out to reduce the genetic information and not to increase it." End of quote. In other words, the opposite of evolution, real science in the present shows clearly that mutations cause things to lose information. And this is exactly what the Bible teaches. Because of sin and the curse, everything's running down.
Ken Ham has a free series of booklets available on our website, AnswersRadio.com. AnswersRadio.com.
We give thanks for the folks at LCMS World Relief because they are the hands and the feet that allow many people to reach out in charity and love to those who are less fortunate than we.
Issues Etc. regular guest Dr. Arthur Just on the importance of LCMS World Relief.
In the Gospels, Jesus says that he came not to be served, but to serve and give his life as a ransom for many. And spending out his life for us on the cross is how he served us. Because Christ is in us, and we embody him in his mercy and love, we are to manifest that in our lives. And LCMS World Relief does exactly that, by reaching out with concrete expressions of Christ's love, mercy, and compassion to those who have been broken by storm and tempest, who, for whatever reason, need the kind of love and compassion that is in us because Christ is in us.
For more information or to donate to LCMS World Relief, call them toll-free 1-888-930-4438.
On the next Midday Living Jubilee, live at 11:05 Friday on AM 850 KFUO, join Paul Clayton and me, Diane Summers. We will meet Susan Farron, former paramedic and a consultant now for fire departments and ambulance services in the San Francisco Bay Area. She is the author of a book called The Fireman's Wife, because she is a fireman's wife. We'll meet Susan Farron on the next Living Jubilee on AM 850 KFUO.
All right, time to play Soundbite of the Week here in the last half hour of the live broadcast of Issues Etc. this week. Your opportunity to call. Now, if you're in your car, just be patient. We're going to play all five soundbites that we've assembled from this week's audio. Come from all over the place. In fact, we got two callers in this slate of soundbites today. One of them came from a program earlier this week, and one of them actually came from our Sunday night nationally syndicated program. We were doing a show on worship. We're going to play all five of them for you. You call in, you tell me which is your soundbite of the week. Just vote for whichever one it is, but be ready to tell me why it's your soundbite of the week. You might find it humorous. You might find it sad. You might find that you agree with it. You might find that you disagree with it. You might just find it weird. But for one reason or another, you want it to be your soundbite of the week. Be ready to tell me why. 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727. How we choose these? We just go through, kind of mentally go through everything we've done in the course of the week, all the audio, all the interviews, even the callers. We go through them and we say, what stuck out to us? What do we remember from this week in terms of someone that said something, or they said something in a certain way that stuck in our mind and that we remember? That's how we choose it. So there's no theme here. Don't look for these things to agree with one another. And you don't even have to agree with it necessarily either. And there are no wrong answers when we play Soundbite of the Week. 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727. The first one's a caller. It's Caller Herb. And he chimed in. We had been listening to a piece on from National Public Radio on abortion. And they were talking about how even now the pro-choice community is toying with the idea of representing abortion as something that is wrong.
Yo, Todd.
Yes.
the thing is that you've won. Everybody knows that abortion is a bad thing, that it's a wrong thing, it's a horrible thing, that it's a sin, probably. But you know what? We need to allow the freedom of choice that God gives us to be applied in this case.
Why is that?
God allows us to do the wrong thing. And abortion is a bad thing. It is a terrible, terrible thing. But taking away a woman's right to choose and a woman's freedom of choice is a bad thing.
Well, let me ask you a question.
It pushes it underground. It pushes it into the dark.
Let me ask you a question, Herb.
Dark ages.
Herb, a question for you.
Yes?
What other bad things do you think shouldn't be illegal?
No, we're not talking about other bad things. We are talking about abortion.
No, actually, I'm talking about other bad things, Herb.
The people with you for so long that now that you've won, you won't accept it.
All right, that's caller Herb. Is he your soundbite of the week? 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727. I don't know about you, but I'm going to remember that call. I will. 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727. That's soundbite number one. Here's soundbite number two. This one comes from a guest yesterday on the program, Martha Brandt from Newsweek. She had contributed to a story there on how the Republican Party is feeling a bit shy when it comes to the issue of abortion lately, especially the leadership. And I asked her about the prospects, what she thought the prospects and the unintended consequence of the South Dakota law banning abortion would be.
The prospects look pretty bleak, at least the way things are configured right now. Justice Stevens doesn't look to be going anywhere, and he's probably the, you know, five out of the four that'll keep Roe intact and probably turn this thing down. So it could actually backfire. And what's also happening is it's galvanizing the pro-abortion rights or pro-choice side, and they're, you know, getting new money, they're getting new constituents, they're really kind of building up steam because they've been saying, you think we've been crying chicken, you know, little, you know, sky is falling for too long with all these reasonable bills that the right's been trying to pass, but lo and behold, this is their true colors, they really want to ban Roe. So it's actually having the effect of galvanizing the left.
All right, the unintended consequences of the South Dakota law, according to Martha Brandt. Is that your soundbite of the week? 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727. That was soundbite number two. Here's number three. Comes from Bob Rosso. Yesterday we were talking with him about baptism. Near the end of the conversation, we came to the passage that many people find troubling, confusing. Some just completely ignore it, where St. Peter says in one of his letters, baptism now saves you. What in the world is Peter talking about?
He's pretty much saying what God says in his gospel. What he's saying there is baptism is connected with the gospel. As Christians, we know the only thing that saves us is God's love for us in Christ Jesus. So apparently, baptism connects us to God's love for us in Christ Jesus.
All right, that's Bob Rosso on Baptism Now Saves You. Soundbite number three, is it your soundbite of the week? 505-7850. 1-800-730-2727. Oh, we do have an in-studio email address, issuesetc@kfuo.org. You can use that as well to vote for your soundbite of the week. Tell us which one it is and why. And here's soundbite number four. This was from Sunday night. A caller, we were talking about worship with Pastor Eric Rotman. And usually when we do programs here on Issues, etc., even if people disagree with this, they kind of know what we're talking about. And we... One thing you don't want to do in radio is confuse the listener. Well, here's the caller.
What I'm calling about is listening to this the pastor talk on worship. I am more confused now than I've ever been. I've always thought with an understanding of worship, you know, is what you come in, you know, what you give to God, and I'm. Either I'm missing something or I don't know, but every question that you've asked this pastor, I've not gotten an answer out of it. You know, I'm totally confused on what worship is now.
All right, what he found confusing, Pastor Eric Mottman had begun by saying, worship isn't what you do for God. It's what God does for us in Jesus Christ. He found that very confusing. Because everything he'd ever been taught was that worship is what he did for God rather than the other way around. Is that your soundbite of the week? The caller on Sunday night on worship. It's soundbite number 4, 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727. By the way, you will hear that interview on worship tomorrow on Issues Etc. All right, the final soundbite. I don't know what to say about this. We reviewed John Hagee's sermon over two days, his sermon on the marriage covenant. We noticed something odd in the sermon. Just make of this what you will.
I've seen some of you speak to your car with more love than I've seen you speak to your wife.
All right, John Hagee's Howard Dean moment. Is it your soundbite of the week? 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727. The best callers are going to get an Issues Etc. travel mug. 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727. And we had a little confusion last week. The best callers aren't the ones who get the who vote for the one that gets the most votes. Best callers are just best callers, kind of like soundbite of the week. It's a judgment call on our part. You get a travel mug, 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727. Which will it be? Will it be Herb calling to tell me I've won on the abortion issue? Will it be Martha Brandt saying there's the law of unintended consequences when it comes to banning abortion in South Dakota? Will it be soundbite number 3, Bob Rosso, explaining how is it that baptism now saves you? Was it the Sunday night caller who is confused to hear that worship is what God does for us, soundbite number 4? Or was it our last soundbite, John Hagee's Howard Dean moment? 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727. We've got about 20 minutes here. Call and chime in. Let's see what Steve says. He's calling from his car. Which is yours, Steve?
Oh, mine's a confused guy.
Soundbite number 4.
Soundbite number 4.
All right, why so?
Well, here's the thing. Most evangelicals, they like everything that Lutheranism and Reformation theology teaches, basically is confusing to them.
Okay, explain.
Okay, for example, you have a show. It's on baptism, and or this week, and the context is baptism isn't something we do; it's something that God does. Okay, now if you compare that to what most evangelicals think, it's completely backwards. And here we are, we're taking worship, and we're saying the definition that everybody in America has about worship is all wrong. Here's what worship is. That's going to create confusion because suddenly you've kind of shattered their nice, neat little way they thought of things, and you're forcing them to think.
Steve, thank you. I think you hit the nail on the head there. So he votes for soundbite number 4, our confused Sunday night caller who had a hard time wrapping his mind around the fact that worship could be what God does for him rather than what he does for God. You know, the source of that confusion really is not so much about worship or baptism. It's about how God works, period, with sinners. Up next, playing soundbite of the week, Don in Creve Coeur. Don, welcome.
Hello, Todd.
Hi.
I've got a hard choice between the confused caller, because I can relate to him, and it's very honest. I mean, he's searching and...
Oh, he was a very honest caller. I almost called him the honest caller, yes.
Yeah, and he's searching and he's getting answers, whether he can understand them or not. That one, or was it Hagee?
Yeah, John Hagee's Howard Dean moment?
Yeah, I thought it was James Brown. He feels pretty good.
We thought James Brown, but he did it 3 times.
Well, it's definitely Howard Dean.
All right.
Thanks.
So which one is it going to be?
Let's go with Howard Dean.
Okay, so you're going to go with John Hagee's Howard Dean moment, that soundbite number 5. There's 1-1. The other soundbites we had, caller Herb, who called to tell me that I've won on the abortion debate. I didn't know I'd won the abortion debate until Herb told me. Martha Brandt saying that we should watch out for the law of unintended consequences when it comes to the South Dakota law. Bob Rosso on Baptism Now Saves You. The Sunday night caller has 1 vote. He is honest but confused that worship had to do with what God did for him rather than the other way around. And then John Hagee's Howard Dean moment. There it is. John Hagee's Howard Dean moment also has 1 vote as well. 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727. Back to the phones, and here's Jason. Jason, welcome.
Thank you. I'll go with clip number 4 because just the whole idea of God serving us is very contrary to, I guess, some of our natural inclinations and just the idea of religion in general.
Yes.
And also, I think both clip one and four, one's a close second, just because both of those clips, to me, really show the medium of radio really well, because you wouldn't be able to do what you did without radio.
Oh, thank you very much. I agree. All right, so Jason is voting for soundbite number four, our Sunday night caller on worship. And yes, it does highlight what radio does so well, which is engage in this kind of conversation. So Steve votes for soundbite number four. Jason's also voting for soundbite number four. Don is chiming in on Hagee's Howard Dean moment, soundbite number five. Are any of the others interesting to you as soundbites of the week? You know, we try before we go on the air to figure out which one it's going to be, which one's going to hit big. We think we know. You could prove us wrong or not. What about you? 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727. No women so far. Calling. Is this Men's Day? Because we've had that one woman who called during our thing on men not coming to church, and it was all men there. Maybe women don't listen to us? Don't say that. 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727. Which is your soundbite of the week? Is it, I like the callers. For me, they're often the ones that stick in my mind the most. And believe it or not, sometimes I remember far better what a caller said than what a guest had to say. 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727. Although what Martha Brandt had to say about the prospects of that South Dakota law perhaps being a fundraising vehicle for the left, that's not likely something you're going to hear very often on Christian radio. Let's talk with Ellen, who's listening in Chesterfield. Hi, Ellen.
Oh, hello, Pastor. You know, that first guy that called, the number one,
mm-hmm.
When they go on and on about a woman's right, I always think about, do they stop and think, where do you draw the line with rights? A woman, if they were correct, they would be saying a woman also has a right to deny a life-saving, a Jehovah Witness woman could deny a life-saving blood transfusion to her child.
Well, Ellen, you rightly point out that, at least in Herb's argument, there's no stopping point. There's nothing but arbitrary stopping points. There's no real hard stopping point when you say, look, we know that this is wrong, but God gives us the right to do the wrong thing. And if God gives us the right to do the wrong thing, then we can't deny anyone the right to do the wrong thing. Where do you stop with that? You can't. All right, we're going to put Ellen down for soundbite number one as the soundbite of the week for her. Let's talk with Mary Lou in Edwardsville. Hi, Mary Lou.
Hello. I also choose soundbite number one. It sounds to me like he wants to be God, and he wants to make the rules and decide and say, God thinks it's okay. God will say, he'll let you get by with doing what's wrong. You know, that sounds to me just like what the serpent told Adam and Eve in the garden when our first parents fell. He says, oh, it's okay. Go ahead. God just doesn't want you to know the difference between good and evil. Just go ahead. It'll be all right. And I think that's what's going now. People think that there's nothing that God says that they have to just stick to. It's all kind of gray, and they'll just make up their own mind and be their own God.
Mary Lou, thank you very much. Now, see here, Jeff, the listeners are getting soundbite of the week. They understand this game now. They understand how it works. It's not about necessarily what you agree with. It's about what sticks in your mind, what you want to react to. Soundbite of the week, we're playing it. We'd like you to play as well, 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727. At the end of the segment here, I'm going to give away a travel mug to the best caller as we play soundbite of the week. 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727. It's not just any travel mug. I mean, I've got travel mugs in my office sitting on top of the filing cabinets. It's an Issues Etc. travel mug, and I guarantee you it's unused and untouched by human hands, and it'll be given to the best caller here at the end. Let's talk with Carl in Clayton. Hi, Carl.
Hey, Todd. You know, I got to go with the Howard Dean moment, because if you remember earlier, Hagee had mentioned that some men aren't worth the gunpowder was used to blow them away.
Yeah.
I think he's ducking the shots.
What do you mean?
Yeehaw, they're shooting at me.
Oh, okay. All right. Thank you very much. So he's going to be voting for John Hagee's Howard Dean moment, soundbite number 5. That's got 2 votes. Soundbite number 4, our confused caller on worship, has 2 votes. Caller Herb, soundbite number 1, telling me that I've won the abortion debate, just now be quiet, also has 2 votes. So it's a 3-way tie so far between 1, 4, and 5. No votes for Martha Brandt on the prospect of South Dakota law or Bob Rosso on baptism now saves you. Kathy calls from St. Charles. Hi, Kathy. Which is your soundbite of the week?
I think it would be one. I guess my when I first heard him call, I wanted to say, I always find it interesting when they stand up and they talk about a woman's right to choose. They never mention a men's right to choose or any other citizen in this country when it comes to constitutional, you know, issues. But for whatever reason, this constitutional issue only includes women, not children, not the men that help father these children. And I just find it odd that, you know, that people don't think this through. How come only in this case are women having the right to choose? No one else is considered.
Thank you, Kathy. So she's voting for number 1. That brings caller Herb into first place with 3 votes during Soundbite of the Week. Well, you're right, Kathy. I mean, it's sometimes a case of not thinking it through. Look, God gives us a right to, or God says a woman has a right to choose. That's caller Herb's contention. But what about the woman in the womb? Does she have a right to choose? Does someone's right to life outweigh someone else's right to choose? That's the real question here, isn't it? 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727. Still time for you to call and play Soundbite of the Week. A couple minutes here in radio time is an eternity. Will it be caller Herb? Do you want to see this as your soundbite of the week? He's the winner so far. Martha Brandt on the prospects of the South Dakota law. Bob Rosso explaining baptism now saves you. Our Sunday night caller who found it very confusing to consider the fact that worship might be what God does for him rather than what he does for God. And John Hagee having a Howard Dean moment, or as one of those who voted for him, that soundbite said, sounded more like a James Brown moment to him, not Howard Dean, but John Hagee, just feeling good. 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727. And best caller is going to get our Issues Etc. travel mug, brand new and perfectly clean. I promise I haven't drunken out of it or drinked, whatever. I promise I haven't used it, yes, or consumed anything from it. While we wait for more of your phone calls, LCMS World Relief underwrites Issues Etc., and their help in bringing you this radio program is also tied together with your help for all that they do worldwide. They're out there helping people. They talk about it as the touch of mercy. And it's a touch of mercy that comes in 2 ways, caring for people in both body and soul, the mercy of one Christian caring for a person in need, but also the mercy of Jesus Christ, our crucified and risen Savior, through a particular gospel word that is spoken as that relief is being brought to those in need. LCMS World Relief can be found at our website, issuesetc.org, or you can call and donate 1-888-930-4438, 1-888-930-4438, LCMS World Relief. All right, still time for a few calls in Lake St. Louis. It's Arlita. Hi.
Yes, sir. Listen, in our family, there is a son-in-law who had, he was not married to his girlfriend. They had an abortion. And to this day, I come from a medical family. We use to abort, meaning to stop, you know, anything.
Mm-hmm.
I have been asked by my daughter to not use that word in their house because her husband is still hurting from the results of that long ago act.
So even the word that you could use in some other context.
Yes, sir.
Not meaning to terminate a pregnancy, but even the word itself is is painful for him to
People
hear.
People don't know what happens to the men. They, too, suffer when their friends or whatever have an abortion.
Arlita, thanks for the call. Now, I think for the sake of argument, I hope I don't misread her. I'm going to put her down for soundbite number one, even though I think she was calling more to make a comment about soundbite number one, the Herb's thinking there in his call. All right, of all our callers, Steve, Don, Jason, Ellen, Mary Lou, Carl, Kathy, Arlita, best caller gets the sound, gets our issues, etc. Travel mug. Who shall it be? I think in this case, Jeff, you got a call on this one? My mind's a swirl with sound bites of the week. Well, I'm going to cast my vote before I make my choice here. I cast my vote for, I think I'll cast my vote for caller Herb, too. That gives him five. Two calls, two votes for soundbite number four, the confused caller on Sunday night. And then John Hickey's Howard Dean moment also had two votes as well. Let's give the travel mug to Mary Lou. To Mary Lou, the issues that set her travel mug. Give us a call, 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727, Mary Lou. And we will tell you how you can get a hold of our issues that set her travel mug tomorrow on the program. Worship with Pastor Eric Rotman. If you listen carefully to that two-hour program, you will hear soundbite number four. And our caller from, I think he called from somewhere down south, confused. And if you listen carefully near the end of the beginning of that program, you'll hear why the caller was confused. Talking about worship as what God does for us in Jesus Christ rather than, well, the way most people think about it, what we do for God. It is, as one of our callers pointed out, the difference between Christianity, what God does for us, and religion, what we do for God. We'll be talking about that with Pastor Eric Rotman. Then Sunday night, Terry Mattingly of Scripps Howard News Service will be our guest. We're going to be talking about religion and pop culture, walking through some of the things that are so common to our culture and how religion has been affected. Then Monday on the program, Ron Rhodes joins us. We're going to be talking with him about the Trinity on issues, etc. Thanks for playing Soundbite of the Week and all your calls. I'm Todd Wilkin. Thanks for listening to Issues Etc.
Listen weekday afternoons to Issues Etc. Issues Etc. is a listener-supported program. Your financial support is critical for the continuation and expansion of this worldwide outreach. Our address is 85 Founders Lane, St. Louis, Missouri, 63105. You can donate by credit card on our resource line, 1-800-737-0172, 1-800-737-0172. For a free audio copy of this hour of Issues Etc., please visit the audio archive section at KFUO.org. Opinions expressed are not necessarily those of AM 850 KFUO. Issues Etc. is a broadcast service of the Lutheran Church, Missouri Synod.